Before we start, Carla, do you want to pick, or maybe we would recommend the Calamansi green tea from Tabucha if
I'll
you would like
it.
To try some.
I'll take it.
I mean,
we're using wine glasses.
I'm gonna make some like ASMR stuff. I'm just giving it a shake.
Oh,
cheers!
Thank you, Tabucha.
You are listening to The Unlabelate Effect. We gather here on the first day of each month to explore all things mental health. Let us be part of your support system to inspire and motivate you to take care of your well-being. We, Vivian, Rita, and myself, Melody, welcome you to our UE community. Our society tends to have a weird obsession with labels. In season 7, we have different valuable guests on the Unlabeling Effect to share some tips on how to rip off these sticky labels and embrace authenticity and be our true self. We have Carla Martinezzi with us on the Unlabeling Effect today. Carla is the CEO and founder of Chom, Hong Kong's food saving app, which aims to reduce the amount of perfectly edible food being thrown into the Hong Kong landfills every day. Since its launch in 2021, the app has saved over 3,000 kilograms of food from landfills. What an impressive achievement, Carla.
It is.
Very well done. Mm-hmm. And behind the great achievement, Carla was not taken seriously in early days for pitching or collaboration opportunities in the corporate world solely because she was a young woman. Let's talk more about the label of being a female junior today. I'm your host, Melody, and with me here today are Carla, Rita, and Viv. Welcome!
Hello!
I gotta say, it's the first time, Rita. No, it's not the first time, but
it's
been,
been
so long.
Yeah, for me to be physically here for the recording.
Yeah, because we usually have like a hybrid kind of thing, and then we always feel so bad because
she... I'll be on the screen like, hey,
yes.
Listen to me, I have a question.
Yeah,
exactly. So, cheers to that.
Yeah.
I already finished mine.
So glad to be here.
Oh, let's open another one.
Yes.
Which one would you like to try? Maybe the oolong?
I think some of these are samples. You need to squeeze. Okay, this is not a sample.
Okay,
I can already tell which was which.
Okay, let's try the oolong kombucha from Tabucha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they added probiotic in it.
Yes.
That's so cool for gut health. That's nice.
Oh my goodness. That is the ASMR.
Let me tell you, that sounded really good.
So, Carla, you said you've tried some of the drinks before, right?
Yes. They sell it at one of our vendors.
Because the one that we were trying was the calamansi green tea, and we said it was really refreshing. It's a little citrusy. It's very nice.
I think serving wine glasses also make it
taste good.
And everything tastes good.
So Carla, we actually met Carla at an event that was hosted by one of our friend Mandy.
Yeah, she was also on Unlabeling Effect before.
Yeah, so she was my mentor. I still see her. And we both kind of had similar journeys where we both had really major burnouts, except the only difference is I didn't realize what a burnout was at the time. And she came to me at one of our expos at a booth. And, you know, she was like complimenting the booth. And then she looked at me and was like, oh, we should get a coffee sometime.
Yeah.
Like, catch up. And then when we did have a coffee, she was like, it seems like you're a little burnt out. And I was like,
when was that? That was like before 2021, right? Because you launched Chom.
No, after.
After
2022.
So you already started your journey of being an entrepreneur then.
Oh, yeah.
Then...
like, I had a really bad breakup in 2022. And then a lot of like life changes happened.
Yeah.
And I was the type of person that was like, just keep going.
Yeah.
Like, if you keep working.
Numb your back to the story of like how you started Chom, because you actually saw an opportunity in Hong Kong with the food waste, a lot of F&B businesses in Hong Kong, and then you thought this is a great idea because there's no one else doing that at the moment in Hong Kong.
Yeah. What sparked that thought?
So I studied F&B and hospitality originally, and my parents are also in F&B, so it's kind of an easy decision. They both do separate things. Like, my mom was a pastry chef, and my dad is he's an engineer for food factories.
Oh.
So it's a very, like, different type of F&B.
Oh.
But I loved, like, food. Like, everyone loves food.
And pastry? You must have grown up with, like, really nice pastry.
Yeah, she did. She did really well at home. Like, we lived in Switzerland. She's originally from Hong Kong, and she wanted to make all these, like, French pastries using, like, Hong Kong Chinese ingredients.
Oh, wow.
I fell in love. I have a huge sweet tooth. It was a big thing. I ended up going to uni for hospitality. Fell in love with, like, everything ops related.
Yeah.
Like, just everything related to F&B, so marketing and, like, all that. I got my first job in F&B at Opera House in Hong Kong.
Okay.
And I was so shocked with how much food was wasted.
Mm.
It was, like... I don't know if you've ever spent any time in, like, an afternoon tea.
Mm.
And they have, like, all the girls around who just have, like, stacks of sandwiches and scones. And they just leave, like, half of it. They take loads of photos and then they leave it. And then it goes back in the kitchen
and then they just
gets thrown away. Because we can't, we can't reserve it.
No. I think that's, like, a big issue for hotels, especially buffets and stuff. Because they have to always making sure that the food was full.
And
they
looks,
right?
Like,
yeah,
luxurious and beautiful. And,
so
then I thought, oh, maybe it's just hotels.
Mm.
And then I went back to Switzerland. I worked in more kitchens and realized, no, it's pretty much everywhere. And then when I came back to Hong Kong after graduation, I worked in a marketing agency.
Mm.
And we did, like, marketing ads and, like, experiences for F&B brands. And I saw even more of that because, you know, you have all these, like, KOL influencer events and they all get, like, you know, all you can eat, like, little starters and appetizers and finger food and all that was getting wasted. I was like, this is crazy. There's
a
single...
Use a piece for the pictures and then they...
Sometimes they don't eat it and then they just throw it away.
Mm.
And I was like, this is crazy. There isn't a single aspect where, like... There is, like, I worked at an ice cream stand. I worked at a coffee shop.
Yeah.
And then.
Do you have, like, a genuine love for food?
Yeah.
I was like, that's a lot of kitchens.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I just love food. No, I'm a big, like, huge foodie. Like, I love cooking.
Gotcha.
My parents are from, like, my dad's from Switzerland, but he's originally Italian. So my grandma had, like, published a cookbook. Like, we're very, like, foodie family. So it was a very, like, big part of my life. I didn't know you could get a career in it. And then it was like, like, my friends became bankers or lawyers or doctors. And I was like, God, you can't work in food.
Yeah.
Like, that's just something you eat. Like, and that's it.
Sure.
Anyway, so I came back to Hong Kong, realized the problem was crazy huge. We looked at solutions around the world and we saw a similar thing in the US.
Yes.
And we thought, okay, well, let's try and apply it here. And then we did market research and we realized actually it's going to be a little bit complicated to copy exactly.
Mm.
So we tweaked it a lot.
Mm.
That took about a year and that started during COVID. So that was 2020.
Right.
I ended up quitting my job and doing freelance work and realized that Chomp would be a big project. I thought it could be a small, like,
side business hustle.
Yeah. Like, you know, like, how hard is it to make an app? Like, spend a couple of hours. And I was like, oh, yeah, like, I could probably still do freelancing in this. And then it started taking up loads of time because my background's not in tech. So I had to learn from scratch.
Mm.
Did you build the app yourself?
No. Oh. So we worked with an agency that's based in India. But it was obviously, like, you need to know a little bit about it before you can, like, you know, get into it. And that took a long time. That was about 6 months. And then we launched it originally in August of 2021. Mm. So, yeah. That was the whole
thing. And now, like, for people to use Chomp would be through the app.
Yeah.
That's the only channel. And then you could, I think I remember I went onto the app and then it could show you, like, where you are. And then you can basically choose if there's any restaurants near you that you want to, that you want to buy some food from. But is there, like, a time limit to that? Is that mainly, like, after the closing time, near the closing time of the restaurants or coffee shops or flower shops, I remember.
Yeah.
I also have.
that's a new one.
Yeah.
So we started working with a few, we got approached by a few, like, home
lifestyle.
Yeah, lifestyle brands,
yeah.
I guess. So the floristry is on the app as well, the Art of Floristry. And then, the Art of Living by Floristry. And then we had, like, a few candle brands approach us. And they we had, like, skincare brands. So they came on the app because they have short shelf lives as well.
Mm.
Or if not that, they also have, like, a high turnover. Like, they change flavors or they change, you know, seasonal products, things like that. Like, you can't buy Christmas products in the summer.
Yeah, true.
So they need to get rid of it so they get more space. But yeah, so there's a, like, a little window depending on, like, the store itself. And they decide, like, when to do it. So if they want, like if a bakery closes at 6, they can choose like 5 to 6, or if they want to stay a little bit longer because the staff are cleaning and they still are happy to serve, 6 to 7 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not sure if I previously kind of introduced Chom in the most like holistic way. I guess now after a short conversation, I would interpret Chom as a platform where you hope to be more environmental friendly and reduce waste. It doesn't need to just be food. It's any kind of product or service that has like a short shelf life.
Yeah.
And then you want to try to reduce the waste by supporting them and giving them the platform to also purchase at like a lower price.
I should probably have explained it before. But on average, it's about 50% off the retail price.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why is because they're either products that are short shelf life or they're at the end of the day, so there's only a certain window.
Okay.
But these, if you think about it, it's kind of a product that would otherwise be thrown away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's, like you said before, it's a win-win-win situation because the customer gets to get a product that's at least 50% off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for example, if you don't know, like if you like a chocolate croissant and you're not ready to spend like $70, you can get it for $40 and buy it and taste it and see that you really like it. And you can go ahead and buy it the next time.
Yeah, I got a basket. I got a basket of bakery goods from Frenchie's.
They're so good.
So you get on the app and just look through what's on there every day and see.
It sits where you are, and then it'll recommend you like what's available, and then it'll have see, I'm a regular
user. Look at this.
And then you will see like how many left. So some places will have like 5 left, 5 boxes or 3 boxes, and then you just go and then you pick up. There's no like delivery service because it's environmental friendly.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember Carlos.
I didn't need to be here.
So everything is pickup only. So it's like, you know, a little walk at the end of at the end of the day after work, so it's nice.
Yeah,
I think it's also because we're in central Soho.
Yeah.
So I feel like everything is walkable distance.
Yes.
Right. Instead of like Kowloon where everything is a little bit far away.
Yeah.
I was about to ask like how the policies of the government and stuff actually supports this, or actually they have a lot of pushback, a lot of files that you have to
get
through.
She's by the way. That's why her question.
Oh, that's what I thought.
Yeah. That's very intellectual question.
Yeah, the policy and structure is always one of the major hurdles for business to thrive.
So we called Food and Health, the Food and Hygiene Department.
Yes.
That would be the biggest bomb.
I called, my co-founder at the time had called, our lawyer had called because I was really nervous about it. So there's this whole question of like best before policy, best before dates and, you know, expiring dates, right? So Hong Kong government states that best before dates are safe to consume 3 months after the date.
Okay.
Obviously, it's with your own risk. We highly like recommend.
Sorry, it's 3 months after the
best before.
Sorry.
Best before.
Best before. Okay, continue.
Although with expired foods, like you should do. I mean, for both, you should do like the 5 sense test, like touch and smell and taste and. Like, if you have milk in the fridge and it says expires, like, okay, so I drink oat milk, and on the label it says 5 days, right?
Yeah.
Because then it gets a little bit funky.
Yeah.
But if there's, like, a high rotation, and, like, let's say you shake it every day and you use it every day and it moves a lot, and then you pour it out and you see that the consistency hasn't changed, it smells the same, it tastes fine, you don't feel like it's a little bit off, like, it's still okay to consume.
Right.
Obviously, with your own risk.
Yeah.
But you know, like yogurt has natural like probiotics,
yes.
And it's got bacteria in there. But you know, you can still eat it like a month after the expiration date. You won't get sick or anything.
Mm.
So, yeah, with a grain of salt, obviously, like pasta can keep for years.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a huge discussion a few months back. It's like whether we should have expiry date on packages, right?
I did see that. I think it was like Tesco in the UK was talking about it.
Or just best before, because they usually just use best before, not expiry date anymore.
Yeah, it was this.
I thought it's always the same thing.
Oh, no.
Sorry. Expiry date is like actual expired.
Yeah, expired foods. Best before,
it
means you can still consume. It won't be the best version of it. So on Chomp, a lot of the questions we get asked is like, because it's fresh food, there's no expiration date. Like when you buy a salad, it doesn't have like an expiration date. And so, you know, a lot of the questions are like, is it safe to consume? Like, are we going to get sick?
touch wood, we haven't heard anything from that. But we do check like food and hygiene licenses for businesses. We have mystery shoppers who go and check. So there's many things, and it's within the best interest of the business to not give like expired food. But if it is about to expire, like we had one vendor that's like a big coffee chain, and they were like writing the best before dates on the boxes, and they would say like, you can consume this only today, like this product would be best today, but it was like baked items, and they were like, this croissant can only be eaten today. When they hand it to you, they say like, eat it today. Or I mean, you can freeze it, like you can make another recipe with it, like cut it up and bake it, you know, do something else. But
was it hard to get the first vendor on Chomp?
So we had 20 vendors that had signed up before we launched the app. We did a survey, and we had, we interviewed 200 people, and we interviewed 20 restaurants. We went door to door, and we were like, we have this app, we had a PowerPoint, and we were like, it's not out yet, but, you know, believe in us. This is what it would look like. And we only had like a wireframe. Like it was just like photos of what the app would look, like. And we were like, this is it.
So what's the biggest concern of the vendors that you approached in, within that 20?
That it would fail. But this is where like the label came in, where it was like, you're so young. Like, why would we believe you? Like, we had one guy who was a friend of a friend, and he had opened a restaurant, and he was like, how do I know you're still going to be in business? Like, how do I know that you know anything? And I was like, what? Friends of friends, like, you should know, like, that should be enough.
It's a credibility, like, you know, you should, I think it must be so challenging for you, like, trying to get the business running, facing all the labels, and then really, you know, because being an entrepreneur is never easy, and it's so, like, it's not stable at all, right? And I guess you, how did you kind of face both the physical challenge, the financial challenge, the emotional challenge?
The financial challenge was like a big thing. That's why I was still freelancing at the time. I was thinking like, oh, it's like, how much could it cost? Like, we had budgeted, we had a quote from the app team, and we didn't need, we didn't feel like we had to budget like our salary or like a marketing budget. We were like, oh, we can do all this stuff we learned at school. Like, how hard can it be? Like, I use Instagram all the time. Like, I could probably market something. Also, I, like, I had worked jobs before. I was like, oh, I sent emails. Like, I've done sales. I've done a cold call. Like, how hard can this be? And so when we did the initial budget, it had, like, one line, and it was, like, app. And it was just lying there. And, you know, we were talking about this, like, amongst friends, and, you know, they were like, what about, like, the cost to open a bank account? Like, what about a lawyer? Like, what about, like,
accountants.
Yeah, accountants and, like, auditors and tax. And, and I was like, I don't think I need that.
You find your way.
But I was thinking not in the sense that, like, I don't need it at all. But I meant, like, I don't think we're there, like, yet. I think we need the app. And then with the app equals investors somewhere. And then...
Was it the case, though?
So what ended up happening was, like, we had spoken about it so many times that we ended up raising, like, a friends and family fund. And that was enough to pay for the app. And then we were like, okay, so now it's getting complicated because we have the app, we have the vendors, but now we need somebody who speaks Chinese. Because I don't speak Chinese.
You need like a local person to help you to localize your product or service.
And I was thinking like, my mom's from Hong Kong. Like, I had lived here a few years already, and I was like, I should be fine. Like, I come back every year since I was born. Like, should be fine. And then as we were marketing it, I was like, there's no way. Like, I'm not even. I ended up calling my mom and being like, okay, so I need to like translate this Instagram post. And she translates it and she goes, this doesn't make any sense in Chinese. Like, I'm going to change the joke. And I was like, but then it changes the image. She's like, but who are you marketing this for? Like, for the expats or for the locals? And I was like, the locals. She's like, then the photo doesn't make sense, you need to change it. And I was like, oh god, so that means like every photo we'll ever put out needs to be checked or approved or translated correctly, or like localized and we were like, okay, wait, this is going to be a bigger job. And then, so if that happens, we need more money. We need someone who's on the ground, like speaks Chinese. We need more money for that. I was like, oh God, like now it's getting a bit, getting a little sweaty now. And then I was still freelancing. We had the fund and we started applying for a lot of like accelerators and grants and we ended up getting a few, like some cash there. And I was like, okay, this is great. Like, you know, we can start moving a little bit. And then we got approached by an investor that's based in Spain, who had lived here before. And I was like, okay, great. Like, this is huge.
Yes.
So we signed it quickly, not knowing that it was going to be, not knowing that something about investors is that you need to have a really good relationship, kind of like a friend where like you can tell them everything and you can get advice, like a mentor and stuff. And I was like, oh, he's got cash. Like, it's fine. And so we're still with him. Obviously, there's ups and downs. But if I could do it all again, don't know if he'll see this, but if we do it all again, I would love to have like someone who possibly, maybe it's a woman, like maybe it's someone who like started quite young, like someone who wasn't in the corporate life for so long. Like the advice is great, but the struggles are different. So it's hard to relate. So yeah, so now we're fundraising, we're looking for new investors and hopefully we'll find someone.
And it's like I can already foresee, or I can imagine myself being in your shoes and then just knowing there's so much, like every little hurdle is not a little hurdle. Like, you know, and it, you've gone through so much. And then you mentioned that Mandy, like, helped, like, coaching.
Oh, my God,
And, like, how did that help, like, with your journey, though?
It was, so she, like I mentioned earlier, she told me that I was burning out and I didn't know. I was like, no, burning out.
But what was burning out for you, like, the symptoms?
I didn't even know. Like, I didn't even notice. It was, so what had happened, and I noticed after she explained it, was that I had stopped working out. I was sleeping way less. I was looking gray. I was frazzled, and the only thing I could talk about was work. Like, amongst my friends, it was just like, oh, this is happening, this is happening. Like, I'm stressed about this. Like, this is what I want to do.
Occupy your mind.
And the energy was low. Like, low in terms of frequency, like positive frequency, not as in like you have no energy to work for your business or work on your business.
It's too high, if anything.
Exactly. But it's more that like the other aspect of life was kind of
like I didn't spend that much time with my friends. And then when we went out like to go for a hike or to the beach, I was so distracted. Like I was just like, my laptop is like 200 kilometers away. Like I cannot
put it switch on and off.
And I was like, on my, I had every shortcut on my phone and I was like just scrambling like emails and like our admin panel, and I was just like on it all the time. And it made me really like anxious. But you didn't notice, like you couldn't tell, like but I couldn't tell.
At the same time, did you feel like you were definitely confident, or you know that you were on something? And that's part of like a quality of like an entrepreneur, right? And then most people at your age, or maybe your friendship group, maybe because no one else was doing what you're doing, even like among maybe other entrepreneurs, like Chom is the first platform that has this service in Hong Kong. So I can imagine how it's hard for people to relate to your struggle, but also how could people understand that, oh, she's starting something really great with a great intention, you know? But then it's hard to convince someone, I guess, like
in every way. Like it's hard to, like, I love my friends so much. I mean, I've known some of them for years, like we went to uni together. But when I talk about like startup issues, like it's not relatable. Like I don't have a career growth. Like a lot of people are like fighting for like, or like a salary bump. Like I don't, those are not things that I have, or I can't think about because I don't have that. Or like they'll complain about their bosses and I'm like,
But you're the boss.
Or like, if I talk about my investor, like it's not relatable, you know.
It's a pretty lonely journey.
It is actually. And there's other startups that are going through similar things, but then they have their own things. Like they're a different age group. Like they have different types of support, or like they're still in university, so they have like their friends who are all working on a similar thing. So yeah, so it's a bit.
What's your most, like, what motivates you the most? Like when you're struggling with those emotional challenges, you know, what keeps you going?
So growing up in Switzerland, mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time in nature. It was like I did loads of like camping trips and hikes and snowboarding, and it was very like eco living. Like my mom had this huge herb garden because she cooked a lot, and we had composting at home, and it was very like green. When I moved here, it was just 180 degree, like plastic bag, plastic bottle. Oh, I was like, what's happening? And so I had to unlearn all these things, and I was really like eco-anxious, or whatever the term is, which is like just being stressed that the planet is in so much trouble. Like there wouldn't be enough time to like save anything.
You almost feel powerless.
Honestly, yeah. And so that's somewhat, it's like weird, right? Because you feel powerless, but at the same time you feel so motivated to like do something about it.
Yeah.
But there are some days where I'm like, God, like when the Taylor Swift article came out about her with her jet, and I was like, God, I like,
I know. Hands up.
You know, how many plastic I recycle? It's like one plane,
right? You're like, no.
Yeah.
It was like, I wrote this whole thing on Instagram about how, like, I started this business to try and save the planet. And it was like to bring back, like, glaciers and, like, to bring back, like, or, like, for my future kids to like, be able to have the same, like, experiences I had as a kid. And then Taylor Swift goes and takes like a 1 hour plane ride. Right? You're like, never mind.
Yeah.
It's like the power or the energy that you're putting in. It's, like, it's hard to see how far your achievement can go or influence other people. Right? But are you happy with like where Chom is right now? And like you're happy that more people, more users, the more connections like you've made, and you're influencing more people.
And, like, I can see the shift in Hong Kong as well with like sustainability. There's a lot more legislation for it. There's a lot more startups that are trying to help it. Like, we're quite niche in like food waste. Yes. It's a really huge problem in Hong Kong that's not addressed. There's a lot of startups for like plastic waste, or like textile waste, or e-waste, or like infrastructure waste, like trying to make buildings more green, you know, and things like that. And there's a lot of startups that are doing such good work. But food waste is a huge problem. It's fucking crazy. Hong Kong is such a small city. We're down to 2 landfills. Which is wild. And out of the 2 landfills, a third of that is just food. Like, and it's like the other 2/3 is like furniture, clothes, like cars, you know, like building material. And then the other third is just food, which is something that like we could have, like we could eat and like everyone needs. It's not like we all need cars.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Please like come to the Kowloon side. I will be a frequent user.
Soon. I'm wondering, like, except the environmental side, have you had a look at the demographic of people who use your service? Could you actually tackle poverty problems as well?
I'm trying to figure this out. If anyone has an idea, I would love to hear it, because I'm really struggling. But so the demographic is 18 to 45.
Okay.
We have a few 45 plus. But it's something we predicted. Obviously, it's an app, so it needs to be like smartphone. So it narrows it down. It's a new concept, so it narrows it down, the generation. You need a credit card to pay on the app, so that narrows it down.
Right, yeah.
Majority are females, so we're trying to push for more males. So we're bringing in more, like, male-dominated vendors, like beer vendors and meat vendors and stuff. But it's, we spoke to Impact Hong Kong, we spoke to Green Hour, we are working with More Good, and they're working with Refugee Union on a collaboration, but there's a huge like logistics thing. Like, we have a connection of loads of restaurants with food, and then we have a huge homeless population in Hong Kong.
That's what I'm thinking.
Like, but we're struggling to connect with food. It's a question of like money and logistics.
Yeah.
Like, who's paying for the food?
Yes.
And who's going to organize the logistics? Yeah. And like, you need a truck, and then the truck needs to be like climate controlled because you're dealing with food. Yeah, I don't know. It's a struggle. But anyway, it's something that I want to figure out, but it's,
there are struggles, but I can see potential.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, wow.
I think that's more frustrating because you can see the goal.
Yeah.
You're like, but I can't get there. Whereas I'd rather just like not be able to see it at all. I go, well, I hope one day.
I want to step back a little and see the problem that Chomp is solving, and to understand why city in general, like, why do we need so much excess?
Yeah.
like the presentation and why do we feel like it's professional? We need that in celebration. And it's just so much stuff. Like it's why do we need that? What's the emotion attachment behind it?
So I think it might be more culture based.
Yeah.
Like I think especially from my grandparents and my great grandparents, like they were very much coming from an era of like poverty. And it was when you had so much food on the table, it was a sign of like wealth. It was like a sign that like you could feed your family, and it was like a big show that like you worked really hard and you were able to afford this, and like it doesn't matter how much was wasted, there was options. There was like fish, meat, veggies, rice, noodles, and then there was dessert, then there were snacks, then there was, I don't know,
it's kind of similar to like Asian culture, you know, like especially if you have like a big meal, like you always need to make sure either people top things up or you need to make sure there's leftovers.
Yeah.
So that everyone, it's a sign to show that everyone was full.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely a big element of that was the culture.
And there's this big like link to that at restaurants. There's a lot of like over ordering linked with that because you want to show, especially like men want to go to restaurants, they would be like, oh, like anything.
Just order.
Yeah, just order, like on me.
But also on a commercial point of view, like restaurants cannot, or they don't want to have the customers to order something that they don't have. They need to always make sure that they have the options here for the customers.
So that's a really interesting point. So in Europe, especially, it's very much like they would rather say like, oh, sorry, we're out of stock. Or we're sold out. I don't know if you've ever been to a bakery in like France or in the UK, and you know they've got like they will show like an empty area.
Yeah.
Like, oh, sorry, sold out.
Mm. Yeah.
Whereas in Hong Kong, it's like, oh, like we can make it quickly, or like we can do this for you, and we can.
True.
It's very much like a service thing.
Yes.
And they would rather have like an abundance displayed and be like, okay, well, here's everything. You can pick anything.
But also I think it's to do with like the demand, because in Hong Kong, or the competitions, because they don't have that, the customer will go to somewhere else.
That's true.
That they could buy the same product. That means they might lose a potential client.
Yeah.
That's also another struggle. You know, it's a business culture, and you know, and people might just want that. They might not believe or they don't know the story of the restaurant, and then whereas in Europe, I feel like, oh, if I love the story of this restaurant, I will come back because I understand it. Yeah. Whereas I feel like there's less loyalty in Hong Kong with restaurants, which is why there are a lot of chains. People don't really necessarily hold loyalty.
The turnover for restaurants is quite high.
Yeah.
It's about a year in Hong Kong.
It's so sad.
It's usually about 3 to 4 in Europe.
But then for F&B, it's hard. Like, you need to, from what I've heard, to break even, you need at least a year. And the life rate, you know? It just doesn't make sense. Which is then, hard.
On top of that, it's a lot of trend. Like, Hong Kong is a very trendy city. Like, if it's not cool, or, like, if there aren't a lot of people talking about it, the restaurant dies. So it needs to be, like, hype. It needs to be, like, very aesthetic and photogenic. And
Instagrammable.
Yeah.
But then how do you find, like, being a young entrepreneur is, like, because...
Especially a young female entrepreneur.
For you, it's, like, your brand, the nature of your product is already very special, very niche, very unique. And then you as an entrepreneur, a young entrepreneur, is an additional layer to your career.
Yeah.
You know?
It's had its ups and downs, I'd say. I think we're still growing, and we're still, like, we've been really lucky to get, like, grants and to get awards and nominated for things, and that's something that we never expected at day one. I think when you start anything, you don't expect it to get very far. You go, well, I'm just gonna try it, and, like, if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, that's okay. Yeah. Like,
I'm gonna give it my 100%, and then...
And we'll see where it goes. So it's been, like, the reception's been really good. We've had loads of support from the government, from, like, grants. Also, like, we've had support from, like, Invest Hong Kong, who've been able to, like, help us with, like, they've asked us to support with, like, legislations and stuff, which is huge because we're such a small, we're a team of three for context. So we're a tiny, tiny company. We still don't have an office. So it's cool to see that, you know, that they're trying to do something and it's trying to shift and they're trying to do this. But obviously there are, like, downs with everything. And then there are moments where a lot of doors were closed because of the way I look, or, like, because I'm a woman. And we had, like, I used to have a
man co-founder, like a male co-founder, and he was given a lot of opportunities because, like, versus me because of his gender. Mm-hmm. And, like, we had, like, interview opportunities or, like, panel opportunities where we had phone calls. Like, I had a phone call where they were like, oh, we really want you to speak at this, like, eco summit. Like, mm-hmm. it's going to be talking about, like, greener, like, you know, every topic on, like, under the sun about, like, sustainability and, like, being green. Like, would you be interested? And I was like, oh, yeah, I would love to. Like, that's huge. And it was a big name. We were like, oh, my God, this is going to, like, change everything.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, yeah, do you mind asking, like, your co-founder?
And I was like, asked why?
I was like, why? Like, his background, for context, was tech and marketing. And mine was, like, F&B and sustainability. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why we, like, started together.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, but if it's sustainability, like, I could be the one doing it.
Yeah.
And she goes, there's just too many women on the board.
Oh, my
God. On the panel.
You said that?
She was a woman on the call. And I was like,
how do you mean too many women?
You know when you just, like, are there just...
Ouch.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, can't you swap someone out? Or...
Yeah.
And why are you... Also, why'd you call me? Like, why didn't you call him? And I was like, you know, I studied, mm. I studied this, like, this is my thing. Like, I can really add a lot of, like, valuable insights here. And she was like, the ratio is just really off. Like, there's just too many women. Like, we need more men on the panel.
Maybe it's just an excuse, I suppose.
And then we get to the event and there's three men on the panel and one woman.
Oh, God.
And we were like,
yeah, the ratio is off. Yeah,
the ratio is off.
I bet you probably have faced quite a few of these. Like,
too many.
Yeah, too many.
I mean, I'm not gonna say like every door should be open for me.
Of course, yeah. But then, yeah, I think it's hard when you have to face these. And like, do you feel like you've found a tool or like a mindset to face these because you know that it's hard for you to change them at that time anyway. So how do you kind of change your mindset to face those
I think you just have to remember that there's so many people in the world. Like, this is not the only guy that's going to give you this opportunity.
Yeah.
There are a million panels going on every day. There are a million investors. There are a million partners and corporates who want to work with you.
Yeah.
Like, that one guy is not going to change your life.
I feel like sometimes, I don't know, like, for me personally, if I face those kind of situations, there might be moments, even just a flash of it, that would make me maybe have a moment of self-doubt.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like, it might hit my confidence, my self-esteem. even though I might bounce back, because I know that I can bounce back.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, suddenly having that sense of feeling, and that would hit you, you know?
Mm. Mm-hmm. It's so bad because you want to be, like, this confident person, very secure, and you're like, you know what, I've been through hardship, like, I got this. But obviously, getting rejected for any of those things, and it's like, that wasn't even my, like, my gender was not my choice, like, I couldn't choose that.
Exactly. And they should see your value based on your achievement, based on what you know, based on your expertise, but not, you know, on the labels.
Yeah. But it's so, you're right. It's really frustrating. There was one incident where a guy from a really big bank came to us at an expo, and it was me and my colleague Gemma. Now, Gemma is older than me. She does our sales and partnerships, and she's older than me. She dresses much more sophisticated. Like, I usually wear, like, quite, like, baggy clothes, but I wear, like, t-shirts and stuff, or... like, I dress my age, which is a good thing, but also not a bad thing, like, not a great thing. And we were at this event, and she, like, looks significantly older. I'm also wearing the Chomp t-shirt, which is a t-shirt. And she's wearing, like, a beautiful blouse and, like, some really nice, like, folded pleated pants. And this guy from a bank, like, introduces himself to the two of us, and we're like, oh, great. And he's like, you know, we really want you to, like, come and give a speech and, like, talk. And he goes, I'd like to talk to the founder. And he's looking at Gemma, and Gemma's like, oh, actually, it's Carla.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he goes, no, I think it's you. And I was like,
you think?
No, it's me. And I, like, we had just handed him my cards.
Oh, my God.
So it says, like, Gemma, like, partnership manager. It says Carla, like, founder.
Yeah.
And he's like,
oh, he thinks that Gemma is just, like, diverting him.
And he's like, no, I want to talk to you. And Gemma's like, that's not me. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
And, like, I had a lanyard, and my name was on the thing as, like, contact person, like, Carlo Martinez's founder. And the guy was like...
How did you feel then? Disappointed? Upset?
I was offended, angry.
Angry?
I was really angry.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, you could have a million signs saying, this is you, and the guy was just not convinced. And I was like... Well, I don't know what else to say here. And you were frustrated.
I feel like for you, there's an extra step that you might at times need to feel like you have to prove to other people. But at the same time, you don't have to because your product says it, you know. Mm. It's like the struggle between and how do you... I always feel like in a workplace, you always... I believe that you have to spend time for you to earn your respect from other people, but at the same time, if they see my quality of work, if they know how I work, eventually, like, time will prove everything, and I don't necessarily have to do something extra to earn other people's respect. But it's like that struggle when people kind of not attack you, but
it's doubting,
trigger you.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So this was quite early days. Like, we haven't, not that we made a name, but like we weren't quite so present, and it was really frustrating because it felt like it wasn't worth doing.
Mm.
It was like, it was a moment, it was a good couple of days where I was like, maybe this just, maybe I'm too young for this. Like, maybe I should like go back into corporate and like learn a bit more skills. Mm. And like, maybe I should learn more about like tech and like, maybe I should get a master's and like do that and then start a business. Like, maybe I'm just
facing a lot of labels.
Yeah, and it's all labels that, like, people had said. Like, even my parents were like, you should do a master's. Like, don't do this.
But do you believe in living authentically and go with your instinct? Like, you know, trust your instinct. And you know you're doing the right thing. You're on the right path.
Yeah.
And you just need to filter out the noises.
It's hard, though.
It's hard.
Yeah. It's not easy.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of, like, Mandy helped a lot with that, where she was like, name your goals. And I struggled. Like, I really struggled. And it took me, like, a week.
Mm.
And she was like, oh, I thought you would come up with it pretty fast. And I was like, I don't know what it is. Because everyone's telling me that I shouldn't be doing this.
Mm. It's always everyone was saying.
And it's like, oh, you should be, like, signing 200 stores a month. And you're like, oh, my God, I don't think I can do that. Like, we're just, we don't have enough money. We don't have enough people. And it's like, oh, you should be doing this. Like, you should be doing this. Or you should rebrand.
Mm.
The name is confusing. Like, like, everything was a problem, you know? And it's like, yeah, maybe they have a point. Like, maybe I'm just not... Maybe I'm too naive and I, like, my head's in the clouds and I'm thinking that this app could work.
And what's your way of finding, like, clarity within those noises?
It was... Mandy helped a lot with that, but a lot of it was really just, like, something she said right at the beginning, like, changed everything, which was... like, you are your brand, and your brand is you.
Mm-hmm.
And not to make work, like, your whole life, but in the sense that, like, it's a reflection of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
If you're struggling, your brand suffers, right? Like, if you're not well, like, if you're sick, your work suffers.
Yes.
If you're, if you don't love your brand, like, how could anyone else love it too?
Exactly.
And that was a huge turning point for me to be like, you're right. Like, I should build something that I'm, like, extremely proud of, but also just, I would want to buy from it, like, every day. Like, I'm so in love with this. Like, it's the coolest thing ever that I would want to use it.
And I always think that a product, it has to be a product that solves problems. Like, it has to be, there has to be an existing problem. And once your product is a solution to that, you know it will work. Like, just...
Good yoga stretch there.
I'm sorry.
Let's have a little cheer.
Yeah.
I never feel.
Oh.
It's always me.
Thank you. How did the oolong taste? The oolong kombucha.
It's smoother than
I'll try this one.
Yeah. What's the first flavor?
It's calamansi.
The first one was the calamansi.
It's smoother than the calamansi. The calamansi has a kick into it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I quite like it.
It's I like it too.
Yeah.
Is everybody comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
I am comfortable.
This one's, tangier.
Mm.
I like this one, yeah. This one's good. Are you comfy?
I am very comfy now.
Yeah.
I was like, how should I do this? And then I was like, let me. What were we talking about?
We're talking about
you.
Solutions. Like, for me, I see any product that it will do well because you know there's a real problem to it.
Right.
And if you're the only solution, you know it will work.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that's what I really believe. But then someone told me once that they won't buy your product if they don't know it's a problem. Like, if they're not aware that food waste is a problem.
But then it's your job to educate them.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, maybe if I just shine a little spotlight going, like, here is the problem.
Yeah.
And this is why the app would work well for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think for any new concept, it takes time. It needs a lot of work on education.
Yeah, to push into people's consciousness.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
I think so.
But this is really exciting.
What's handy about Chomp is that, like, even if you don't give a shit about the environment. Mm. Like, you're not a green person. Mm. You don't even care. Like, you get a good deal and try all these new restaurants.
Exactly. I used to use an app that's similar in London a lot. Because where I used to live in London has a lot of, like, coffee shops. And I love pastry.
Yeah.
So it's very convenient.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question, though. So sometimes, because in Hong Kong, I used... Okay. The context is that I used to work for a food delivery company, and then we targeted Hong Kong mass market, and Hong Kong is very unique. Like, they're very educated, professional. They have a lot of opinions, but yet they're very attracted just for pricing. They're very price sensitive.
Yeah.
So yes, on one hand, there's so many people, entrepreneurs that are pushing great ideas like electric cars or food waste or mindfulness even.
Mm.
But then if there's no immediate benefit, it doesn't really matter how much you educate.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were trying to push... Okay, I cannot say that.
Confidential.
NDA.
Because there's a sustainability program that we pushed out. And we were able to push it up because we were huge.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many other similar brands tried to do it, but they never executed it. Because not only there's not enough demand, but there's not enough people to support.
Yeah.
So I think for, like, how do you, you just said, like, your brand is you. You are your brand. But then how do you tweak... But how do you decide how to tweak, like, what to tweak into to fit into the mindset of the mass market?
Yeah. I think it's still an ongoing struggle because, like, you're right. If the people are not on board, like, the app dies.
Yes.
Like, there's no support. There's no one using the app. We don't make commission, so it dies.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it needs to be, like, the user experience, like, it needs to be so much better.
Good shot.
I'm sorry. user experience where, like, it needs to be so easy to use. Because if it takes too long, the benefit is, like, too short.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it takes too long to get an immediate benefit.
Yeah.
Gratification, like, it's gone. Like, I would never use the app again.
Yeah.
Then another one is, like, the product. Like, it needs to be, like, really cool products that you get. Like, the pastry needs to be, like, so delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be... Like, maybe it's an up-and-coming restaurant, so, like, you can actually get it instead of queuing for a table. Like, you can get it on the app and things like that. So, another thing is, like, localization.
Mm.
Like, Mom did a really good job. She's still doing translate. Like, 2.5 years later, she's still doing translations.
Yeah.
But she did one where, like, I can't read it, and, like, Google Translate obviously can't take Cantonese properly.
Mm.
And she did one where, like, it was a joke about, like, Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't tell you what the joke was because
the band.
The band.
The band.
Oh, okay. I knew it was about Mirror because it said in English, like, Mirror.
Yeah.
except the caption that I had written had nothing to do with Mirror.
And
nothing to do with music, but the way she explains it to me, she's like, I can't tell you the full thing because it wouldn't make sense, but it's using one of their lyrics and, like, I made a pun.
And approaching it that way with the locals.
We had so many comments on that post that was like, whoever's doing the Chinese, A+, like, you know, and they're writing all these, like, terms, and I was like, and I was screenshotting it, sending it to my mom, because she doesn't have Instagram, by the way. So I'm, like, screenshotting
it.
She
did such a good job.
Yeah.
And she knows about Mirror.
Oh, she is diehard, obsessed. Like, right. She was asking me to, like, take photos of, like, the McDonald's campaign when they did the collab. And I was like, mom, this is so strange. Like, she's, like, in Switzerland. She's like, take a photo to me.
She knows how to speak the language, you know? Right. The slang and speak to the people.
Exactly. Mm. It's not just, like, Cantonese as a language. It's, proper.
Capture people.
Yeah, understanding, like, what they want.
Yes. How to talk to them in the same language.
Yeah.
So, another thing is, like, food waste is not something that you really learn. Like, it's really common in the Western world and, like, expats because you understand, like, climate change and global warming and stuff. It's not very common in, like, Asian countries. And so I was telling mom about this, and I was like, God, it's such a struggle to, like, not only explain the app, but also explain the problem, showcase why it's a problem. Yeah. Like, it's a big package to have to explain. Mm-hmm. And mom was like, why don't you just tell them that they can have bread for breakfast?
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like, what do you mean? And she goes, oh, everybody buys bread after work and they keep it for breakfast. Like, just say that. And I was like,
I don't quite get it.
Yeah, so I didn't get it either. And so she's basically saying that, like, after work, a lot of people go to bakeries and they buy the discounted bread and they eat it for breakfast the next day instead of, like, rushing to go to work and, like, picking up something. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people tend to buy it after work, like, late at night and keep it for the morning, or they give it to their families and, like, stuff like that. And in my head, I was like, how am I going to market this thing? You know, like, how
just
am I going to
get it at night? Just get
and
it
mom was like, just tell them to get it at night for breakfast. Why is this hard?
Like, after work.
Yeah.
Step, like, an extra, you know, en route kind of.
And I was like, I got to talk about sustainability. I got to talk about landfills. I got to
I feel like when you establish charm, you have an intention for environment and stuff. Yeah. But when you market it, you have to speak to people's personal intention. It could be about poverty, it could be about sustainability, it could be about, I don't know, whatever reason that they want the charm service. Yeah. And I feel like that's the way.
Exactly. You guys get it like this. It took me 2 years to figure that out.
I think it's because you need to make the customers, you need to make sure they can relate to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I have a follow-up question, though. Because what Rita said, yes, like, we need to put out different messages for different groups, but then people see things. Mm-hmm. So if one day you said, oh, get it for breakfast, and then the next day you said, get it for lunch, you know, like, oh, this is a too extreme example, or this is we're about sustainability, and then the next day you're like, this is a half price croissant. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have such inconsistent key messages, people will also have a tough time figuring out who you are. Mm. And once they don't know who you are, they're not interested.
Yeah,
right.
Because they always want to see brand as, oh, it is me. Mm. It's part of me. Yeah. I feel resonate. So I will consume that. So how do you balance this?
It's a little bit, like, it's a good point. And this comes up a lot in our meetings. And something that I really hope, like, I've seen it work with other brands, but I'm hoping that, like, one marketing message opens the door to, like, being interested in the brand. Like, let's say you're really interested in breakfast and, like, bread in the morning.
I love breakfast.
And, like, let's say you become a loyal customer to Chomp because you're there for the bread deals. Mm-hmm. When we start marketing things about, like, environmental problems and, like, we talk about food waste problems on our Instagram and social media, and we share, like, interesting links on our EDMs, I'm hoping that those people stay because they learn more and they end up listening to other key messages. Mm-hmm. But you're right, to be bombarded. I think if you didn't know Chomp at all and you were bombarded with so many different messages, it's totally overwhelming and you might not use the app. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're one step forward and you've already started using the app and, like, you were hooked by, like, one message and then you were marketed, like, oh, and then there's also a lunch deal. Oh, and also you're saving the planet. And also it's walking distance, so you're doing well.
Right.
You know, and being credited for different things.
Yes.
I think it's a little bit...
It's for the engagement.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit easier.
But also, I think it's a lifestyle. Like, different customer has different lifestyle. And eventually, if you see them constantly always buying a similar thing, it's like an algorithm, right?
Yeah.
You understand, and you will try to target them with certain messages. And I think, but that's, like, more the marketing side of things. I think the education side is essential because that's the foundation of your brand.
Yeah.
But then how do you market them and target them to different customers? That's a completely different, like, tier.
It's,
like, to
hard.
Me.
Yeah.
It's so customized for everyone, too. Like, there's so many different groups. But I wanted to ask, like, till this day, you launched for
2 years?
Yeah.
Two, three years.
Well, we did soft launch for 6 months, and then official launch is in November. So I'm counting it as, like, this November will turn two.
Oh,
like, officially.
Oh, there's a huge party, too.
Is people invited?
Of course. It's pretty public.
Okay.
But we haven't planned anything.
But I want to ask, like, we were talking about, like, how people perceive Chom as a brand. But for you, like, what's the similarity between you and Chom if they share still? Like, other than the core belief?
Yeah, the core belief is a big one. I think, like, when we first picked vendors, we really started to choose vendors that we really liked. Like, I used to go to Frenchie's all the time for their espresso cinnamon rolls. I don't know if you've tried them.
Espresso cinnamon roll.
I don't even drink so good coffee,
I need to try it. I love espresso.
Let's get on the Chom pad right now.
Because I don't like cinnamon bun. I like cinnamon roll. I don't know why. Like, usually I don't like cinnamon, but apart from cinnamon bun, like, that's the only
thing. I find the glaze, like, too sweet, but he doesn't put any glaze. It's just, like, he mixes espresso. I don't know if it's espresso grounds with cinnamon and sugar and rolls it in. And it's, like, whole wheat instead of white flour. So good. Anyway, so I used to go there, but I digress. But used to go there and really loved the products, and you know, and it's, you kind of try to choose, like, you reach out to vendors. You can't reach out to all the vendors. It's, there's too many restaurants. Hong Kong has, like, the fourth most restaurants per capita in the world. Like, there's just not enough time to go to every restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
Plus coffee shops, plus bakeries, plus dessert shops. But, yeah, it's too many. So we had to be a bit strategic. We started our soft launch with, like, central sort of Hong Kong Island, because that's where we saw the most demographic who answered our, like, marketing research questionnaire. But the ones we reached out to were places that we frequented a lot. And we were like, well, we really love the product. Like, we want other people to love it as much. Yes. And, like, we want it on the app so that, because we love it, we want other people to love it. So a lot of the restaurants you see on there are, like, places that I used to go to so many times. Like, I still do, but before the app. Yeah. So Salad Stop used to be near my office when I worked in Quarry Bay. And now they're on there with four locations. Like, a lot of the bakery places are there because I had such a big sweet tooth. But Young Masters is a guy who went to uni with me, but he does one of the best, like, craft beers in Hong Kong, I find. And so Young Masters is there. 99 Bottles on Peel Street. If you guys ever been, it's a great bar, and they're also on the app.
It's good. It's a personal touch, you know. Yeah. And also, it shows that you are conscious with how you select your product.
Yeah.
And it's a curated app. It's not just, you kind of want to grow it, like, with a very careful step of selection.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, you won't say no to, like, you know, restaurants you join, but
you're doing it step by step.
Yeah, you know? I think when you first start, you want to, like, you want the restaurants to succeed
on
the
app,
and so you want to do it with, like, places that, like, your friends love and, like, you love, and, like, it'd be easier to get people to buy stuff. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you knew that it was really popular, for example.
There's one personal question, because I'm from branding. Why is it red? Like, why is it very, like, because the logo I'm referring to, it's, like, bright red.
It's bright red.
It's very Christmassy, to be honest. and it's, like, very bold.
Yeah.
The font is very cute as well. So is there,
it's
like,
fat. It's a fat font.
Is there a reason?
It's a very, like, fat font.
Like, cloudy.
Yeah.
So red is color theory for hunger. Like McDonald's red.
So we're supposed to feel hungry when we see
it.
It stimulates you to, like, associate.
It's like a color association thing, and it's it triggers, like, different colors trigger different emotions. Like, blue is either sad or calming. Green is more exciting.
Two different things.
I know, it varies on the person. Hit or miss, you know. So red is, but red is the same. It's either hunger or anger. So there's loads of different emotions that get evoked by color. So there's a big color theory on this. The bold was supposed to be, like, there were at the time a lot of food apps, like, in Hong Kong. There was Uber Eats. There was obviously the two pioneers, like, Foodpanda and Deliveroo. And we wanted to sort of break that. and be a new type of app. So the fat font was like bold, and the color red. And we have like a cute little like bird chicken mascot because Hong Kong loves mascots. Like every marketing campaign by the
has a mascot.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Like the food and hygiene one is a dinosaur. Like,
yeah. You know the green six?
Yeah.
It's no offense, Hong Kong government, but it's not very nice. Like it's like a.
It's just a six.
Green. Yeah. No, but it's alive. Like it has legs, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then I looked at it. I was like, I don't know what it means.
The purpose of it was to catch your attention.
Yeah.
That's what it's that
like,
way.
So strange. Like the recycling mascot. I don't know if you've seen their site. He's like an orange like tear duct.
They have so many.
They have
guys. So many of them apparently for each like department.
One with food waste as well, right? The one with really huge eyes.
Oh yeah, I hate.
Oh god. Most tummy and stuff, and seeing that you're gonna order more than
like don't order too
much. Exactly. Yeah.
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 Over order.
That was horrible.
He's not cute.
Like, but I gotta say that messaging was right on point.
Yeah.
True. That mascot, I was like, yep. I cannot be like a big eye, small tummy guy.
Yeah.
That was. The color is a bit off, but then
I mean the face structure was not
there. Yeah.
But what does some bird mean?
So bird is the type of animal or animal. It's the animal, is it?
It is an animal.
The animal that eats a lot of scraps in the city. So when you have like when you like leave crumbs and stuff, so the original tagline for Chomp was "No crumb left behind," and the bird was there to like pick up the crumbs, and it was supposed to be this.
That is so.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
But you moved away from the tagline.
The thing is, we ended up with so many taglines because there was like "No crumb left behind," then there was a food waste game changer, and like we had done a bit of like A/B testing, just to see. But they all resonated, and now we ended up with like three taglines. We're like, oh no! So there's quite a few, and you'll see it's a little bit confusing. We should clean up the messaging, but you can see like on our merch, it's "No crumb left behind," and then on our EDM, it's like "Food waste game." Like it's a bit confusing, but it's because we couldn't tell which was more popular.
Or maybe it's when to use which one.
That could be it. Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. For us, it's like dare to feel, dare to be real.
Yeah, that's so good.
But this is a bit like abrupting the recording, the timeline of things. But then you said you burned out before, right?
Yeah.
But then how did you get out of that burnout?
It was weird. It was a really strange burnout because I had like, I'm sure you've had like mini burnouts at uni or like at school where like you're just powering through. You've had like 6 caffeine doses and like Red Bull. And, I used to keep a chunk of like, I used to work for Red Bull, like one of the Red Bull girls for like uni. I don't know if you had
dangerous. What is Red Bull girls?
Red Bull is the drink. And then you sell, or you...
Yeah, like, so the girls would, like, drive around different campuses with a car that had, like, a giant Red Bull on the back, and they would just hand out free Red Bulls.
Yeah.
And it was, like, campus activation.
And she holds the business? It's just her, or Red Bull really hired her?
No, they would hire, like, uni students. I was, like, 18.
Wow.
And they would just pick, like, a couple of girls to, like, go from different campuses and just... Wear a Red Bull
like
shirt.
Like a summer job.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just hand out free.
Like a part-time job.
But you have that in Hong Kong. There's like people
sometimes.
With shirts that hand
out.
Like,
sometimes. Yeah, sometimes. They don't Fenton do that as often,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. Not so much, but yeah.
I see. I'm sorry.
And where was I going with this?
Yeah. Right now.
Right. So at uni, like, I had worked like part-time jobs and studied, and so it was a bit crazy. And I ended up doing like mini burnouts, but everyone was... going through that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started with Chomp, and then so that period when I had the burnout, we were just planning our like first anniversary. It was 300 people. We had like Sephora who sponsored. It was at Soho House. It was like a big thing. We had just signed a deal with like Hong Kong Tramways. We had a tram running around.
Wow.
Like it was a big moment for Chomp. Yeah. And we had just finished a partnership with Cyberport. We had just finished with like K11, New World Development.
Mm.
Like, God, big things are happening.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
Maxime's was about to sign. And like, oh my God, like everything is happening.
Yeah.
And it was a kind of moment where it was like, just go forward. Like, don't, you can't pause.
No.
Like,
you're worried to lose the momentum otherwise.
Yeah. And this was in October. The party happened in November. The tram happened in November. We ended up signing Maxime's probably in December. I'm not entirely sure on the timeline. But I had the thought so many times where I was like, I can't stop. Mm-hmm. Like, it needs to keep going. Because, mm-hmm. like, if I stop, like, these people would turn away. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll cut the deals. Like, Maxime's won't join us. Like, the app will die. Mm. Can't stop. Mm. And then that's when I met Mandy. That was in October. And then we had coffee in December, and she was like, okay, like, it's getting a bit concerning. I've been seeing you for a couple of months now, and it's getting a little concerning.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, but all these things are happening. Like, grants are going to happen. Like, January's around the corner. Like, it's going to be a whole new year. Yeah. And we need to push, like, a Lunar New Year campaign, a Christmas campaign. Like, it needs to go.
Yeah.
And she's like, you are... Relax. Please breathe.
Part of the reason is because you've been waiting for these kind of opportunities, and you're so grateful, and you're like so excited.
And I think that's kind of the thing that she taught me a lot, was like to learn to say no. Mm-hmm. And like, if I mean, I'm gonna take like tramways for example. Like, I could have said no. I could have, but it's not exactly a no. It would have been like, we can do it in January. Mm-hmm. We can do it in fact. Like, if they really wanted to work with you, they would wait.
They would,
And I couldn't, that thought was impossible.
You didn't understand that at that point.
Yeah.
And then it like, took you a while to realize that.
Yeah. It was like, no one would wait. No, it's now.
Now or never.
Or never. It doesn't matter about my health. It's now. And she was like, if you're sick, like, who's running this?
So that was a wake-up call for you.
Yeah, huge.
So you should reprioritize your health over anything else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hadn't exercised for like 2 years because it was COVID and like everybody was at the gym. It was really stressful. Then like for that 1 year, I completely disregarded my health. I just ate awful. Mm-hmm. Like I was basically like snacking a lot. I hadn't gained that much weight, but it was more just like
unhealthy. You don't feel the right energy.
No. Yeah. I couldn't sleep properly. When I woke up, I was groggy. I was taking a lot of naps because I was just not catching up with sleep. Barely ate food, like a meal. I barely ate a meal.
I was just snacking all the time and maybe not being conscious of what you were taking.
And so I got my health in check with Mandy. Mm. So she, part of her like mentorship is like checking in on me. And she has this checklist, like, have I started exercising? Like, did I sleep enough? And, like, she told me about running. Mm. And it was something that I had forgotten. I did it a lot in high school, but
I get busy, you know? It's like, there's no good running route.
Yeah, and then you're like, well, can't run. Or it's like, oh, like, you know, the shorts that are really in trend now are the bike shorts. They're not good running shorts.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no.
I can't run. Like, everything's an excuse.
Yes, yes.
And
so you feel, do you feel like you kind of found your own mechanism now to, whenever you feel that, oh, shit, I'm, like, approaching my burnout, I'm going to have to take a step back. I'm going to have to work out. I'm going to have to do certain, have a certain ritual for you to be able to kind of feel grounded. And focus.
Yeah. And a lot of it is just saying no to things. Like, I think I was someone who was like, yep, I can do it. Yeah. Yep, no worries. Like,
do you feel good saying no?
No, that's really guilty.
You still feel guilty.
But it's a learning curve, I think. Like, obviously.
Cheers with that.
Can I chop up?
Hold on.
Cheers. There's a lot to learn, and it's never going to end.
It's never going to end, no.
I think saying no is on top of the belief that I will get there. Like, good things will come, better things will come.
Yeah.
And that belief is so tough.
True. And it's like your interpretation on certain words, right?
Yeah.
It seems that like no equals to something else. It doesn't mean no is like a rejection. It's how you associate no.
Yeah.
And also you prioritize the quality of what you could offer over the quantity. Because when you stretch yourself so thin, it's going to compromise something on one way or the other.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that. And like at the time, I was like, no is no.
Mm.
Like it means door closed. But I never thought of the opposite, which is yes, if I say yes, but yes is like 50% yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Like 20%
Absolutely.
Yes. Mm. And it wouldn't be like the best version of yes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 100%. True. I guess I'm going to wrap up. And every time before I wrap up, we always ask our guests, like, if there's any labels that you would want to unlabel and share with our audience, and hopefully we can inspire someone else.
So many labels. I think I'll make this sort of like a phrase, I think. But I think the biggest thing is that, like, you are not the label. That there were so many labels that were thrown at me. It was like being a woman, or like being too young, and like people around you being older, or like not thinking that your business would be here long enough, so why should I sign with you? I think just there are labels. Obviously, there's always going to be labels, but you yourself don't need to believe in the labels, and knowing that you are not those labels can bring you way further than that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carla.
Thank you. So that's all for today's episode of I Am Not Just a Young Woman, featuring Carla Martinezzi. Join us again next time when we invite more valuable guests and rip off more labels. Thank you. Let me save that.